The state agencies may impose additional program or care requirements when the state pays for the care or when through some future law if the state is certifying a home or a person's eligibility to get federal payment. Article 5 just is a very is a section that deals with all the procedures for complaints, investigations, adjudicatory proceedings, sanctions, and penalties. And this was done by the Attorney General's Office with a great deal of research and also with Division of Family Services to look at current licensure laws and procedures and to make sure that we had filled in some gaps. We've had some lawsuits over procedures that weren't clear enough and that should have been in statute when they were only in regulations. So this is considered kind of the current state of the art of what you should do, that you should be able to not just close someone down, you should be able to have interim sanctions, for instance, that you could say to someone, you can't admit any new people till you clean this up, or we'll fine you $200 a day until you clean this up, that you have some interim sanctions other than just saying we're going to take away your license. So it has a whole panoply or sort of a range of compliance mechanisms that the licensing agency can use. It provides immunity to complainants, defines our investigative procedures and powers, requires written notices of the violations and the methods for curing them, the notice of possible sanctions, and a way for the homes to get variance procedures. And this was important to us. That's in 4733530, is that either before or at the time someone's notified of a violation, the home is also told how it can come in and request a variance to show that it's meeting the intent of the law, even if it's not specifically doing it exactly the way the law originally was written. We feel that we may find new ways of doing assisted living that we didn't think about when we wrote the law. This law doesn't define how you do it. It's trying to just set the field. And basically, the rest of Article 5 goes on to spell out these sanctions. There are $500 per day administrative fines allowed, not to exceed $5,000. There are procedures for appealing the sanctions and for suspending the sanctions until the appeal is completed. Section 560 has all the constitutionally required due process procedures to be required, the rights to notice, the public hearings, ability to close hearings to protect people's privacy, rights of residents to intervene, and so on. And finally, there's a Section 570 that makes noncompliance. This is what I think I was thinking of. This makes not being licensed when you're supposed to be a Class B misdemeanor. Article 6 is a general provision section. It gives the agency's ability to set licensing fees, promulgate regulations, and sets out all the general definitions used in the chapter. And then actually quite a bit on after that, after page 25, there's a long transition section because we have to repeal a lot of the current law on dependent adult. We have a section that continues, Section 2, page 25, lines 17 to 25, continues the exemption for state procurement code for any state-paid contracts for services provided under this chapter. We amend the long-term care ombudsman statute in Section 3 of this bill to make sure that this definition is in the long-term care ombudsman's purview, and so on. So most of the rest of the bill is make sure that we amend concurrent parts of law and that we delete sections 5 through 10, pages 25 through 27, basically amend the current DFYS licensing law to take out all references to dependent adults. And I think that's about wrapped it up. We previously had a provision allowing first or second class cities to license adult foster care homes and adult residential care. That's been taken out of this statute, but the division may decide that it wants to by contract. And that's been provided. And then there's just a transition section. This bill does not have an immediate effective date. Most of the bill would be effective January 1 of 1995, but the section allowing the departments to get working on their regulations would become effective immediately upon passage of the bill, so that if the bill became effective in June, there would be about a six-month period to get any other regulations in place that needed to go with this bill.
Thank you.
Sorry, it's a long bill.
Well, no, you did very well. I'm proud of you. Yes, you did a very thorough job. Are there any questions from the committee?
Madam Chairman, a question on the fiscal note. Apparently, this is to hire two people who would go around, do the inspecting and the licensing procedure, is that correct?
Representative Bunny, through the chair, yes, that is for the Division of Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities for the licensing of the homes under their purview. The Division of Senior Services, one of the things we've been able to affect by merging our two divisions is we've looked at it and we've said, we've got a couple of vacant positions on our vacancy list and we've got enough funding, we're going to be able to squeeze it out, I think, out of our current resources. So we intend to also have a licensing worker for homes for the elderly, but we did not put in a fiscal note for that. We're going to absorb it in our fiscal year 95 budget's been structured
so
to do it.
There'd be
at least three starting out, two at DMHDD and one at senior services.
you use the term consumer quite often, and the consumer, of course, pays for services they get. And I, my thought would be to encourage you to charge a fee for these licenses so that in the fiscal challenge that the state is facing, we don't have additional state spending that we can.
And we do have that power.
I have that. That's one of my questions is, since we're trying to get all boards and commissions to pay for their own activities, I think certainly, and I assume there are going to be many homes that are going to open their doors to this type of facility, that they will be able eventually to pay for this whole thing.
Madam Chairman, I think eventually it's true. Right now, when we checked, if you take a slice in time, like today, there are probably about 138 people, adults, over age 55 in such a facility as they exist under current law, and then there are probably another, I'm not sure how many for mental health and DD, maybe another 70 or 80, so there's only maybe about 200 beds or slots now, but I think it would grow, and we do have the power to set the licensing fees.
Let me ask you one question, and then Representative Vesey had a question. Will this be covered not only by private pay, but it will also be covered by insurance and Medicare? I mean, will it fall under Medicare? Medicaid or Medicare?
Well, Representative Tui, Medicare today would not cover this, because Medicare does not cover today nursing home care except for the first, 120 days of rehabilitative care after a hospitalization. Okay, so Medicare doesn't cover much in the way of long-term care. Medicare might allow some of these people in these facilities, if, say, they went into a hospital and came out, they might be able to get their post-hospital home health care visits from Medicare, come into the facility or their apartment for just as they would if they were at home. But Medicare, per se, will not pay for this care today. Medicaid does not have this as an option. This is not an option that Medicaid will pay for it as a total option, say assisted living. It's not a service you can add to your state Medicaid list. It's to pay for assisted living. However, what you do have is under Project Choice, one of the services we will pay for is residential supported living arrangements. Now, that's a very limited thing, 100 elderly right now and about 90 other disabled adults. If there's a budget increment next year, it might be more. so otherwise, it's going to be a fairly restricted program for some time. Medicaid could possibly pay, and I think Health and Social Services is investigating the possible fiscal consequences of this. It would be possible for a facility to either set itself up to possibly bill Medicaid for the personal care attendant part of its service or for some of the private duty nursing. But again, it's only to the Medicaid-eligible people at a lower level than Project Choice. Project Choice is like nursing home people can have $1,300 a month. This would still be community level. It would only be those persons with $800 or less and $2,000 in assets. It would be a much more restricted Medicaid eligibility. So there could be some increased use of some Medicaid services just because getting into these facilities, the administrators of the facilities would be more likely to push people to, hey, you really need to get signed up for Medicaid and we should really get you on personal care. On the other hand, many of these homes might not want to bother with billing Medicaid for these hourly things. It's a trade-off.
And the charge of these homes is optional. It's up to the homes.
It's up to the homes. I can tell you what the current market's like. In Anchorage, you'd see adult foster homes ranging from about $800 to $1,000 a month up to, we know of private pay homes that are full entirely of private pay people paying $2,000 and $2,500 a month. The adult residential care facilities are charging, between $1,600 and $3,000 a month.
Thank you. Representative Bundy.
Madam Chairman, I would observe that paying anywhere between $800 and $3,000 a month, an extra $10 a month would pay for this licensing. Something that I think the department should take a close look at. Of course, I'm sure the governor soon finishes putting the $924 million into the budget reserve. We'll probably put some more money into this.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
One license at a time.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Since we're talking about money, then there is not going to be any kind of regulation to the providers on how much they can charge for their assistant care. They can go from one degree to another. That's not good. Who controls the market?
Representative Davis, through the chair, the idea of behind this bill is that the consumer will buy what they want to buy, and that we did not want to start out with the kind of regulation that's on nursing homes where we do a certificate of need of who can build it, and then we regulate their rates and we regulate everything they do. We tell them how they have to staff them and how many people they have to have on each shift. We were trying to let the market develop in Alaska and develop in a different model on its own without so much regulation.
It's probably going to need a revisit because I'm sure there's plenty out there that will provide such care, but if that is open, some people don't have much choice on where they have to go. And so if one is paying $3,000 and there's not a place that they can get it any cheaper than that, they might have to pay $3,000. Somebody's going to have to monitor that.
But you wouldn't market going to an apartment house if you can find an apartment for $300 versus $800. I'll keep looking for the $300 one.
In some cases, that might be. But if you're in need of having your back up against the wall about going from your home to assisted living versus nursing home, that wouldn't be the next option. Nursing home care, as opposed to assisted living. This is the stopgap in between leaving your independent home into an area where someone will be providing this service for you, and you don't need necessarily to go into a nursing home to get that.
I think that leaving it open to private enterprises.
I suppose being open to private enterprise is fine. I still say that it need to be monitored and reviewed.
Maybe that's done with Medicaid.
I don't know.
Thank you, Representative.
Well, they're only going to pay so much.
Exactly. Thank you. Representative Beasley, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You mentioned a fine. I think you said $500 a day up to $5,000. I didn't see that.
Okay. Madam Chairman, to Representative Beasley, it's in the administrative section, sanctions section, starting at page 20 and going on to page 21. And it's a whole range of sanctions. They start at line 20, page 20. And then the fine part is on page 21, lines 5, 6, and 7.
Sorry, I just missed it.
Oh, it's okay.
And over on section 4733570, we're making a violation of the licensing requirement, a misdemeanor again.
Right.
I
know.
Our statutes are kind of mixed on how we treat licensing violations, but do you really think that the state wants to put a license violator in jail at considerable cost? I mean, is that your desire or intent? Or?
Well, Representative Vizzi, through the chairman, I think that the state likes to have that ultimate handle if it can't get compliance through administrative sanctions as a way to shut someone down. And there were times there were board and care homes in the early 70s and 80s that were shut down, and I think that probably sometimes criminal misdemeanors were used.
The general procedure on a Class B misdemeanor is a fine seldom exceed $250. I don't know how that really got enacted into law, but that's just the effect of the courts. To put somebody in jail, we do so at a cost of $70 to $100 a day. Don't you think the government would really rather have their money than have their time in jail? I'm just really suggesting that maybe you set that up as a civil penalty as opposed to jail time.
It's a good suggestion. I'll talk to the law about it.
Judiciary. Thank you very much. Are there any other questions of Mrs. Sipes? If not, we will go to public testimony. We have three people signed up and maybe more in the audience. Dennis Murray, would you like to come forward, please? And if you'll state your name and serial number. Dog tags.
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Tuohy and Co-Chair Bundy and members of the committee. My name, for the record, is Dennis Murray. I'm the administrator of Heritage Place, a 45-bed skilled nursing facility in Soldotna, Alaska. I'll try to be brief. You've been here a while already this afternoon. As an administrator of a nursing facility, I've reviewed the bill and talked with Connie about the bill. I do have some concerns. As the commissioner indicated at the outset, the idea is a social model. But as you go through the structure of the bill, all you see are medical terminology. And I think if the intent is to provide a non-medical model and an in-between to catch the niche of people who are not being safe and who are not appropriately served in independent housing, whether that's a senior apartment or their own home, The language of the legislation, as I read it now, would particularly I'm looking on page primarily that would be on page 4, because page 4 in section in F speaks about skilled nursing care 24 hours a day for 45 days. Section On going down the page at line 24, it talks about terminally ill. All of this terminology is medical model terminology, and terminally ill is not defined in the bill, for example. We're all terminally ill, some people would suggest, and they're just varying degrees of it. So Connie indicates in informal discussions that certainly the department is willing to look at that aspect of it, and I would submit to you that it should be. The way in which the legislation has been characterized is that there's no state dollars involved. This is to encourage private entrepreneurship. And I would agree that that is a laudable goal because we're trying to create more choice for the population. However, as with anything that is consumer-driven, it depends upon what is the market out there, who are my customers, and how do I market my services. And I think that in most communities, other than perhaps the Anchorage Bowl and maybe Fairbanks, you have a very small population that may fit into any particular category on any particular day. We have a nursing facility in Soldotna. It is probably true that there are some residents in our facility who are on the borderline. They were not successful in independent housing. There was no, for whatever reason, no in-between, no supervised living situation. So they're with us. They receive our services and arguably need our services.
Can I ask you one question to break in? Do you charge them less when they're on borderline? Do you charge them less than you would a person that needs more assisted living, or are they all lumped together?
Under current law in this state, there is no distinction. Once you get through the door for skilled or intermediate care, it is a rate, an all-inclusive rate for an individual facility. There are different rates under Medicaid. And of course, the law says you cannot charge your private customer less than the state is paying. So you are required to at least reach that threshold.
Thank you.
But anyway, not again, you've been here a long time. I think that's the concern, or some of the concerns that I would have with the legislation as written. Also would just comment in the earlier testimony of both Ms. Sipe and Commissioner Usera, they spoke about the gap and didn't mention the Pioneer Home system. Indeed, we already have a system for some 600 persons that provides residential care, provides assisted living. However, the burden of paying for that is not on the individual, as I'm sure the committee is aware. And as you look at this saying, yes, communities ought to do this and individuals ought to be encouraged, there's a balance there somewhere in terms of what exists in the community in terms of a nursing facility. If by providing these services, although it's stated the goal is for private individuals and contracts, as Division Director Sipe pointed out on page 18 at line 19, there is authority given to the state to provide project choice services. And those services could include that 24-hour nurse. I mean, I'm being perhaps facetious, but that's $520 a day times 30 days. That's $15,000 a month. I'm only pointing that out to make my point that indeed is what the nursing facility is already in the community there to do.
And I realize that you're fighting for your little piece of the pie.
No, I'm not fine. I'm saying that in any community you have a fragile system.
Yes, I realize that. But this bill, and correct me if I'm wrong, is doing giving a family a license to do this in their home. Now, if you would address, Connie, the project choice, I don't believe these people can be in that home, in a residential home. I don't believe, but if you'll address that.
If I may, this is Connie Sipe for the record, answering the questions from Madam Chairman. Actually, choice will pay either in someone's home or one of the services we will cover right now as we've set it up is we will pay for not the room and board, but the personal care service and limited nursing service. Of course, we can't pay around the clock for a month or we blow the budget. We will pay for limited nursing care for a choice person either in their home or right now in an adult foster care home or residential. So they could conceivably get paid for some of their care in an assisted living facility under Project Choice. But remember, only Medicaid-eligible people, not right. The general population right now. But, yeah, we could do that. And we have to balance those things, like do you pay for nursing for 2 weeks to keep somebody on Project Choice? And that's part of our juggling of their budgets.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think I'll simply stop there, but I do feel that the committee needs to be aware of the concerns. I don't think it's something that needs to stop this legislation in front of this committee unless members have serious concerns that they want answered before you move the bill, and I'm not opposing the bill in its intent. I am suggesting that the way the language is written, it is a duplication of what already exists in nursing facilities. And as with Medicare, I mean, there is a presumption that people go into nursing facilities and never leave, and that it is not a home-like environment. A lot of that stereotypical language is old language, because in 1987, the federal government mandated that nursing facilities change their behavior. And we have more regulatory environment to assure you that that's the case. I don't know that it made things cheaper, but there is certainly a clear message from the U.S. Congress that nursing facilities needed to be more home-like, and that was a good decision by Congress. So to disparage nursing facilities, to point out that this would be a much better process or system, begs the question in that we need both, and what we need to do is manage both so that one does not unintentionally diminish or reduce the effectiveness of the other. And when you get into medical services, that's what you're doing. You're a nurse, you're a social worker, you know, earlier you've had several discussions about liabilities. There are all kinds of liabilities in healthcare. You have tort reform in front of you this session to deal with some of those liability issues. You talked about the person who reports, who can be, you know, obviously sued. It may be thrown out for the immunities clause, but nonetheless, they've spent a lot of their own money for doing something the state required them to do. Thank you.
Just a moment, if you would. Are there any questions? Representative Beasley.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm directing this question more to the chair, but we spent considerable time last year defining terminally ill, I believe, in a bill related to corrections. I don't know. I leave it up to the rest of the committee if they feel that this proposed bill is deficient in defining terminally ill. I know that is I remember the same discussion last year. We are all terminally ill. At what point do we want this statute to trigger in, this definition of statute?
I don't see the relevance of this. Terminally ill.
We're allowing certain care to take over, certain levels of care standard to take over for a person if they're terminally ill.
And who determines it?
Who is going to determine that? Are we subjecting somebody to liability because they made a decision that this person is terminally ill? They may live 10 years longer, but they were indeed terminally ill.
Thank you. I think that...
I was just going to suggest that, you know, if it would make people feel more comfortable, we would research what that definition was,
yes.
And we could insert that definition and incorporate that in the bill. We could catch up with it and provide that, if that would make people feel...
Well, there is no one definition. And last year, when we were dealing with it in corrections, I can't remember where we ended up with it, but we wanted to make sure that this person was not going to get out of their bed and go do harm to society. More than terminally ill, I mean, they were physically incapacitated and bedridden. But.
Thank you.
Did you have...
No, that's all.
Anybody else?
We can find
there are some definitions.
The doctor have to agree, sir.
Dave Williams, David?
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Dave Williams with the Department of Health and Social Services, Division of Medical Assistance, often known as Medicaid Outlet. What I want to do is also be very brief because we're all tired. The department, though, I want to make a brief statement but make sure that it's really understood to be stressed. We support this bill. This bill should go forward. Last year, we initiated the project choice, the waivers and such. We opened the doors on that last month, so that's just getting off. But there are people who will not qualify for a waiver. There's only slots of allowing for 401 people to be served in a waiver in its third year. And there are people who need personal care, are in care, but also want to live in their home, but don't have a home, maybe need an assisted living home. We think this is a good bill. It should go forward. Some of the things we want to highlight for you. On page 3, excuse me, page 2, line 29, it's clear that assisted living home does not mean a medical facility or a nursing home. We take that to mean that it would not be covered by a Medicaid rate advisory committee, or rather commission, would not be subject to all of that required cost reporting of a rate commission. That's just not appropriate. It also would therefore means to us that it's not really an institutional level type provider, even though it's three or more up to some unknown amount. We don't see this as more than an assisted living home. In section 430, which is on page 18, there is a section here which gives authority to the state to impose additional requirements to receive state or federal payment for services. And yes, as Project Choice is a start of a three-phase, really, project. Phase one's the waivers. Phase two incorporates lots of other things, but one of the hopes and reason why we put assisted living homes under the waiver is that we like to see this industry start. We'd like to see it promoted, and it will grow. The extent to which it grows, we're not sure. We are working on a fiscal note, and we're working with the lead agency to determine how much that would be. For the first year, though, I would have to say it's not going to be anything. There are people already receiving personal care services. There are people who can be paid now under hospice care as of a bill passed last year. So those things will continue to those people living in their home. In an assisted living facility, however, we have regulations right now that say we will not pay for personal care in those homes if there's any state or federal money going into them, which is the case in most cases. The reason for that was we felt the state was already paying for that kind of care if somebody's living in a residential facility. So we will be getting to you with a fiscal note. I expect the first year to say zero. We're going to need to work that out in conjunction with Department Administration. I think the last thing I want to highlight is on the last page where there's the bold statement which doesn't subject these facilities to a certificate of need, and that's probably appropriate. There's another thing which you'll have language, I'm sure, transmitted from the department that would be on its way here, I'm sure. It'll talk about conversion of an assisted living home into a nursing facility, which is a really strong concern of the department. That has happened before, and we would want to see a certificate of need, regardless of the amount of money involved in that conversion, which could be very low. We wouldn't want to see things automatically or tacitly becoming nursing homes.
We're
terrible institutions.
Well,
I did not say that. I don't think so.
No.
I think the reason is we do have a certificate of need law that is intended by the legislature and the administration as well to look at how many nursing homes are really required to serve the needs of those who can't be served in other settings. The policy of the administration and the legislature has been for years that folks should have a choice of where they live, and that's what we're promoting. We don't want to see some loophole open that would circumvent that certificate of need requirement.
Thank you. Are there any questions
of Dave? Hearing none,
thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Tom Bowling, would you like to come forward, please?
Good afternoon, Co-Chair Tui, Co-Chair Bundy. My name is Tom Bowling. I'm the administrator of Our Lady of Compassion Care Center in Anchorage, and I'm also serving as the chairman of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association this year. I come here to, I support clearly the concept and the direction of this bill. I would ask and encourage the rapid passage through the committee of this bill. I do share some of the concerns that Mr. Murray brought up, but I feel that in conversation with the department, in particular Ms. Sipe, that there's a recognition that there's some definitions that maybe we need for our benefit to understand, and maybe some minor wordsmithing, but I don't think we're looking at any major context change with this. So on the state of being brief, and maybe Mr. Murray and Mr. Williams knowing what brief is, really that's my brief comments, just encouraging and asking the quick and rapid support of this bill.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of Mr. Bowling? Hearing none, I have one more small item I'd like to bring up. We received a letter from the Home of Senior Citizens. Are you aware of that letter?
Not of the letter. I have talked with them last week in great detail, but I don't know what the result of the conversation was.
This letter emphasizes there apparently they're building a facility in Homer, and the maybe it's something you need to address to them. The Homer Fire Department has laid some stipulations down concerning the fact that people are going to be in bed for more than so many days, and that will institute another set of fire codes. So if it's possible, I think, and if it's all right with the committee, I will ask you to address these before you and have maybe a communication with them, and then take that up again in judiciary, because this will go with the packet. I would appreciate, and so that we can move this on. Are there any more people in the audience that would like to testify? Don't you dare. You had your choice. Thank you. I will close this hearing to the public. Are there any other questions from the committee?
I wanted to know, Madam Chair, if anybody from the department has anything to say concerning the testimony that we just heard. The concern about the medical issues versus just assisted
care. Very quickly, if you will.
Very quickly, Connie Seip, for the record. Just to say, actually, it was a surprise to us. We used a uniform act that used that kind of language, and we felt that, in fact, people around the healthcare field would be more comfortable with that kind of language than if we changed it to something that talked about residents and tenants. So, in fact, the department is talking right now with representatives of the nursing home industry, and I think the current foster would probably all feel comfortable with language that talked a little bit less about administrator and medical. But we're surprised. We thought that, in fact, if we talked too social, it would be alarming to some people. And we used a uniform act that I thought had struck the same balance. So we're talking right now about possibly changing some of those, because I don't think they changed the meaning. But they seem to change the tone in people's minds and sort of the emphasis. And so, yeah, we're talking right now, the commissioner and I and members of the Nursing Home Long-Term Care Committee are talking about possibly coming in with some suggested amendments, including some of the definitions that have been sought to more clearly
tie
down.
That you would have prepared for the next committee?
Right. Yes.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions? Hearing none, is there a suggestion? Representative Davis?
Yes.
Waiting for amendments, I think. I mean, I know
it's been suggested that the amendments will come up at the next meeting at the judiciary. Is that that's what you're saying, Representative Davis? Davies?
Oh, I didn't hear that part.
What is the wish of this committee?
I make a motion that we move the bill with the accomplishing notes to the next committee with individual recommendation.
Do I hear?
No objection.
No objection.
That's what you're hearing.
Hearing none, the bill is moved. So moved. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm waiting for you.
Dennis. I didn't know.
I lost part of the move.
Yeah, and I agree. And I